Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Donald Trump's arsenal of ultimatums, temper tantrums, and expletives are not delivering the desired results. Iran will not simply surrender. It doesn't have to. It has many cards to play. Trump doesn't have a winning strategy. Iran does. Cross-talking Trump's war, I'm joined by my guest Larry Johnson in Tampa. He's a former CIA analyst and U.S. State Department counterterrorism official. And in South Carolina, we have Ethan Levins. He is an independent social media journalist. All right, gentlemen, cross-talk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Larry, as we're convening right now, Donald Trump continues on his posting rampage. The latest is, a whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. The message is much, much longer, but that's enough for anyone to get the idea of what this man is thinking. What do you take from that? I mean, this is a constant doubling down on negative returns. The problem in discussing this conflict on this program, and I've been watching a lot of your media appearances as well, my friend, is that the problem is we're trying to make sense of something that doesn't make sense at all. Our rational faculties are failing us because what we're seeing is so irrational and illogical and very dangerous. Larry.
I fear there may be some unintended irony in his statement. Yeah, a civilization could end tonight, but it may not be Iran. It could be the United States. And it, not so much the physical termination of the United States, but if Trump does something so heinous and so awful that it will have completely demolished the notion of the America as being a benign force in the world, it will be the complete unveiling of the United States as the force of evil. And, you know, with respect to Iran, the story we were talking before we started recording about, we remember the days of the American public had been inculcated with this propaganda about Iran as a threat. And yet what most Americans don't know is that starting in the fall of 1980, Jimmy Carter, yep, and Zbigniew Brzezinski, yep, encouraged Saddam Hussein to attack Iran. And then, under Ronald Reagan, we doubled down by providing, yep, chemical weapons, the chemicals that were used to make weapons of mass destruction. They were used 20 times between August of 1983 and August of 1988. And in addition to that, the United States was providing intelligence from the CIA and from the National Security Agency and from the National Reconnaissance Office that was being hand-carried by a personal friend of mine, Pat Lang, who's now deceased. But Pat was hand-carrying it to them so that we helped the Iraqi military, yep, plan attacks on the Iranian people. So we keep saying, well, they chant death to America. Well, you know what? If the Iranians had killed 300,000 Americans, like we did to Iran, of that 70,000 being civilians, they haven't even done that to us, and we're chanting death to Iran. He's talking about ending their civilization. Yeah. This man needs and must be removed from office.
I'd like to point out to our viewers and Larry, our mutual friend Mohamed Mirandi was a victim twice of those chemical attacks. Ethan, you know what's very bothersome here is that after 41 days of bombing, all of military targets are already been destroyed or at least attacked. Mm-hmm. That means what's left, it's civilians. So we have the Israelization, mm-hmm, / Gazification of this war. It is to destroy civilians and physical infrastructure. That's a war of annihilation. That is a war crime.
Oh, of course. The military strategy basically has failed. They've bombed every installation, every rocket launcher they claim as they still fly in the skies. And it's like they've ran out of ideas. It's a simple failure. You had years to prepare for this, and now you've gotten to the point where we're 41, 42 days in. The Iranians are not giving up. They're not surrendering. The president just signed up for the volunteer military service. These are people that are willing to fight the United States, willing to fight Israel. And it's an escalation battle. It's like a game of chicken. Who's going to give in first? And the Iranians are never going to give in. This is a war of survival. It's a war of just preserving the country. And their freedom, sovereignty is at stake. And these are people. It's an ancient civilization that has been through multiple invasions, multiple attacks. A lot of them facilitated through the Americans, sadly. But they understand this is, quite honestly, the final battle. It's been prophesized. It's been talked about. And Trump's deciding that after losing for the first few weeks, after bombing the military installations, the assassination strike, that all of it has ultimately failed. It's made everything worse. The global economy is choked out. Regional allies are freaking out. And now the Israelis are bogged down in southern Lebanon against a formidable foe. It's just came into an absolute disaster. So what's Trump decide to do? He's going to take it out on the civilians that he's claiming he wants to save. He said the other day that the civilians in Iran, they're sad whenever the bombs aren't dropping. Oh, and then this morning it says it's going to annihilate, you know, the population. I have the numbers. 244 children, 3,546 as of now, because it changes hourly, people have died. And he is willing to up that number in order to get some sort of victory, a propaganda victory, because nothing else is going to work. And this obviously won't hide.
Yeah, well, that, Larry, that explains his Easter Day through social, which obviously I will not repeat here. That's not for broadcast, okay? But, I mean, I think it tells us a lot about a state of mind that you could write that on Easter Day. The people that elected him are Christians, American Christians, evangelicals, and he wrote that on Easter Sunday.
Yeah, it was disgraceful. I mean, he used two of the seven words that George Carlin said you can't say on television. He didn't get censored for it by his own government. But the reaction among the American people, I think, has been a mixture of shock and horror. It is... this is, I think, a further sign that Trump is actually, there's something medically, physically wrong with him. There is no social filter. To have those kinds of hysterical outbursts is the only way to describe it. Because, you know, one moment he's proclaiming that, well, we don't care about the Strait of Hormuz. Let the Europeans take care of it. And then in the next breath, he's then insisting, dropping the F-bomb and saying, oh, you must open it now. And then it's like, okay, which is it? And the fact of the matter is, there's nothing that the United States could do militarily to open the strait. Yep. And when I say nothing, if we were willing to commit 3 million men, a two-year war, and take about 1 million casualties, we could probably eventually secure that strait. But at what cost? So... Whereas it can be solved diplomatically. I'd be curious to see what China and Russia and frankly some of the Europeans are now, how they're reacting when they're watching this kind of crazed ranting.
Well, I mean, Larry, what we're seeing, I haven't had time to make a program on the squabbling about NATO. I'll be happy to do that and show my crocodile tears, but that's for another time here. But the European allies are apparently making direct connection to Tehran about their own interests. So, Ethan, this is another way of alienating the world. I mean, the world before this is all done, the world will collectively want to sanction the United States and Israel, hopefully. Ethan. Yeah.
Oh, Israel should have been sanctioned years ago. Whatever happened in Gaza should have woke everyone up, and it kind of did. But this is like an absolute double standard. I don't think I've ever seen this before, and I'm kind of new to this, kind of young to this, but it baffles my mind how America can how we can start these wars, bomb these people, commit atrocities, and so can the Israelis, and there's nothing. There's no accountability. There's no responsibility. Yeah. And it's blaming everybody else. You know, Trump's blamed Iran. He said they cannot have a nuclear weapon, so we have to bomb the civilians. And I look at this and I say, well, we've got one. The Israelis aren't even a part of the NPT, and they have a hidden program. What's the fuss about it? It's some deeper agenda. It has nothing about saving the civilians. It has nothing to do with the economy or the Strait of Hormuz. It's all about this weird American fascination back to Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria of wanting to just control other people. I don't understand it. Now they want to control Iran, and Iran has finally fought back. And Trump has found himself into a spot to where he can't get out of. And like I said earlier, he's just going to continue escalating until fire and fury engulfs the region, because he doesn't care. This guy's demented. He's lost his mind. And I had a great-grandfather. And once he got around that age, you know, we used to talk about it. They sadly decline mentally. And this is the guy that's in charge of one of the world's strongest armies. And the decisions he's making, it's just strange.
Yeah,
they make no sense.
But Larry, before we go to the break here, I mean, it is quite interesting here, looking at it from 30,000 feet, that a non-nuclear country, Iran, is staring down two nuclear powers, the United States and Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that is what they... I don't know if the Iranians had realized the potential success of their plan, but the seizure of the Strait of Hormuz was the ultimate game changer, where it put Iran on par with the United States in terms of being able to exercise financial control of the world. And they can't be underestimated. This is the game changer.
Yeah, Larry, the control of the Straits is Iran's nuclear weapon.
Yeah, without radiation. But the effects are global. And we're just beginning to see the impact as we're talking right now.
Yep.
And it's going to grow worse week by week, which is actually going to give Iran more power, not less. We see the Giorgia Meloni of Italy. She's headed to Tehran to talk to the Iranians.
Yep, that says it all. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a break. And after that break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's war. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's war on Iran. Okay, I want to go back to you, Larry, again in Tampa. This rescue story of a pilot, and I've heard you, Scott Ritter, and others describe it. And I don't really want to go chew up the time about the military aspects of it, but I'm more interested in the implications of it. It's my understanding this was an attempt to secure some of Iran's enriched uranium. Then there was the mishap. They had to rescue the pilot. And then the operation to capture the enriched uranium was called off. So it didn't fail. It was just called off. Can the Americans pull that off again? Because it looks to me that that was a kind of a card that Trump wanted to play as a possible off-ramp. Larry.
They can try, but it would come at great cost. I think one of the other consequences of this is the Iranians now... I think they realize there is that potential, but now they're going to go out and examine within a 50-mile radius of every site, every nuclear storage site, to see if there are any airfields, airstrips that could be used as what they call a FARP, a forward arming refueling point, where the U.S. forces would fly in, they would refuel the helicopters, and then try to launch the assault. It's the chances of such a thing succeeding are extremely remote. The actual damage that could be done would be limited. You could wind up in a situation like Black Hawk Down, where instead of just, they went to capture eight guys and all of a sudden an entire force was caught and trapped and faced significant casualties. So that was sort of, I'll call that the fallout from this, that what they had anticipated doing was disrupted because of that F-15. It was involved with doing attacks in and around Isfahan for the purpose of preparing for what was going to follow on. They get shot down, and then the whole game changed.
Okay, Ethan, you know, what is Trump's goal here in his doubling down? Because as I've already mentioned here, everything that he's attempted has failed. Why, or the people around him think that the same strategy will succeed? Because logic would dictate that that doesn't make any sense here. He's only going to compound his problem. As we were convening, a news report came out that the Revolutionary Guard said that it will respond beyond the region if the U.S. crosses its red lines. So the Iranians are telegraphing that you continue down this path, the war will expand and it will go beyond the region. Is that something that the Trump administration is prepared for? I think not. Ethan.
That's the million-dollar question, is what is going through Trump's head? Who's around him telling him that this is all going to work, this is going to be okay, because the Iranians are prepared to drag this out even further than the region. They've already got the Gulf countries wrapped up mad at Trump right now. They've got the Israelis goofed up in southern Lebanon. And Iran is willing to do whatever it takes, absolutely anything, in order to get this war of aggression essentially over with. And Trump is going to continue just escalating and escalating, ground troops, invasion, Karg Island, and this guy's not going to stop. And the Iranians have a well-prepared plan of escalation on their own on how to pressure the Americans economically and diplomatically to get them to back off. Because the more this war gets out of control is the more America looks like an unreliable partner. And that's what really can crush the American idea of power in the Middle East whenever all these countries realize that we can no longer trust you, like Qatar, the UAE, and Bahrain are really figuring out very quickly that they moved all the air defenses to Israel instead. If Iran can continue to escalate this further out of the region, maybe throw some missiles, drag a few other countries in this and make them feel it, and they're way willing to do this because it's a war of survival, then the Americans can be hurt in the long term. Now, you can rebuild bridges, you can rebuild cities and all of that like Iran, they're going to do. It's an ancient civilization that's been through this stuff before. But with America, can you really rebuild that trust with these Gulf countries, with this Middle Eastern countries? Nope. You can't. Because they were thrown under the bridge. And Iran, by holding the Strait of Hormuz especially, is showing that America isn't this unstoppable giant that they thought they were going to be. And now everybody's vulnerable, everybody's feeling it, and the Gulf countries can even be more angry that the Americans at home, we're not feeling this. We brought the war over there to these countries that were living in peace, and the Iranians are more than happy to continue escalating this and hurting America's global image in the long run.
You know, Larry, there's all this talk. I don't take much of it very seriously. A suggestion of a 45-day ceasefire, the intermediaries that they're talking to. I take it all with a grain of salt. I mean, because when you're losing, that's when you want to have a ceasefire. It's not when you're winning, okay? But see, the problem is here, it's so asymmetrical. Trump is looking for a political way out. A way that, you know, what he could call a victory. And giving the way his mindset right now, whatever he calls victory, we wouldn't understand it. But the problem is that the Americans and the Israelis, they don't understand that Iran wants a strategic shift. They want a strategic decision. They want a resolution of the security in that region. The Americans are playing checkers. The Iranians are playing chess.
Well, and actually, they invented chess, if I recall.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
So, this is actually a mirror image of what's going on between Russia and Ukraine.
And Ukraine, exactly.
Because Russia's had its negotiating position very clearly enunciated. They haven't deviated from it at all. In fact, they've threatened to go beyond what they've demanded. And here, the United States keeps pretending that they've got some leverage in this, which they do not. And Iran has been quite upfront about what its demands are now. In fact, before they printed them, I was saying this like into the second week of the war. And it's real simple. All sanctions have got to be lifted immediately. They're not going to negotiate over that. The sanctions have to be lifted. U.S. military presence out of the Gulf. Because you don't need a U.S. military base there. The only reason is to attack Iran. So that's got to go. Iran's going to demand reparations. I think they found a backdoor way to get it by charging, if you will, a cover charge to get into the Persian Gulf. You have to pay to get in.
And to get out.
Yeah, pay to get in. This is like, you know, once you're in Studio 54, you still got to pay to get out. Exactly. Right. You know, the same thing. And then to get some ironclad security guarantees that they're never going to face this again. There is a naive element within Iran, just like there was in Russia. In Russia, that believed, okay, we can negotiate with the West. You know, surely they're going to listen to rationality, and we don't want conflict. And then they had to finally realize, these people are crazy. You can't deal with them rationally. And that's where I think Iran is now. They recognize the United States is not amenable to reason and logic.
You know, Ethan, you're closer to the MAGA movement geographically and generationally than I am. I was never a part of MAGA. I've always been very skeptical of it. But it's going to be MAGA that's going to have to tell Trump to stand down. Is that possible?
That's a... another really great question that I don't know the answer to. Is it possible?
Ethan, let me just tell you something, my young friend. None of us have the answers because we don't understand the questions.
I'm figuring this out very quickly. That this is a that Trump. I'm losing my mind at this geopolitical game that's going on. It's so confusing. But yeah, MAGA and his own cabinet and his own Republican Party. Some of them are already splitting off, but they're going to have to be the ones that admit this defeat. And you have a lot of these loyalists in D.C. that are just refusing to acknowledge that something bad is happening. They're boasting on Twitter, on social media, that we're winning. We've decimated their military. Fox News is bragging about the deadline ending. It's like they're going to broadcast a civilizational collapse on TV. These people are so just deeply rooted into this, you know, I don't want to sound weird, but imperialistic mindset, you know, that is kind of going on right now. And it's just... we're going to have to see someone in his own cabinet, whether it's Vance, whether it's Rubio, whether it's the people that Trump himself picked that are all loyalists, finally speak up and tell this man, you have lost, you have failed, the plan did not work, and we're going to have to see Trump do something that he's never done before, and it's to take accountability and to face the music that he's probably going to get removed. He needs to get removed. The midterms are a loss. This war was a complete disaster and a loss, but... it's like he's so far down in the lying rabbit hole that everyone that jumped in there with him, this weird MAGA.
But you know, Ethan, we all know who Trump is. Okay, he's no stranger to us. Yeah. Okay, maybe we're seeing, you know, the worst version of him, which is certainly true here. But Larry, where is the U.S. Senate? You know, where is the legislative body? Okay, what are they? Are they twiddling their thumbs? They're going to pass a $1.5 trillion military budget for him? What the hell is going on here? Where is the other parts of government?
There are actually, we had pictures of Lindsey Graham dressed as Snow White at Disney World, okay?
Ethan, there's your Lady Graham, your senator there. There you go. Keep going, Larry.
But you know, Trump, I think, now has really, he started to energize the opposition among those who were some of his most staunch, stalwart supporters. If you saw Tucker Carlson, he did a broadcast Monday evening in the United States, and his description, he wasn't attacking Trump on a personal level, but he described that he was particularly horrified by the Sunday tweet by Trump on Easter. And he saw he went pretty deep on the fact that suggesting that Trump is actually at war with Christianity, which I went, whoa, this is, you know, when Tucker gets to that point, you know that, you know, and when Trump loses someone like Tucker, and it's not just Tucker, it's across the social media space, people that supported him, like Alex Jones, Joe Rogan, Candace Owens, Dave Smith, you know, these people have actual audiences, unlike CNN, Fox, and MS Now or MSNBC, whatever it used to be. So Trump's support base has eroded dramatically, and I don't think he can recover from this. And I think it ultimately will lead to his ouster.
Yeah, I don't see any recovery from this at all. The only thing we all can hope for is a resolution of this conflict on... And the terms will be determined by the folks in Tehran, not in Washington and not in Tel Aviv. And it's only a matter of time. Gentlemen, we just have to hope the carnage, before that happens, the carnage will be limited. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Tampa and in South Carolina. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.